Hello, and welcome to Words on Film, the spoken word podcast dedicated to moving pictures. I'm Dan Burke, your host and movie critic, and I'm here to tell you exactly what I think of some of the latest movies out right now.
I have three brand new movies to review for you for this show, movies that just came out this week, all of which are available on streaming. First, though, I have to report some bad news. And this is the kind of year 2020 has been. There's been the pandemic. There have been raging forest fires in California. There have been two hurricanes that have pummeled the Gulf Coast. It's just been a bad year. And we've also lost a lot of great people this year. Particularly, a couple of weeks ago, I reported on this show about the death of Chadwick Boseman, who died the night before I did this show or came to record this show. And sadly, many of you have heard by now that on September 18th, 2020, we lost a great Supreme Court justice in Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whose death is not too surprising. She, after all, died at the age of 87, and she was battling pancreatic cancer for quite some time. So even though her death is not entirely surprising, it is sad. And I cannot even begin to list the accomplishments that Justice Ginsburg has achieved in her life. And I'm not going to go too much into detail, because you could probably tune into CNN and other news stations to get a more comprehensive biography of Justice Ginsburg. But I'll just say very briefly that she, of course, is an icon, not only in Washington, D.C., but also from her years of her legal career as an advocate for the advancement of gender equality and women's rights. And even before she was nominated to the Supreme Court justice as the second woman on the Supreme Court, the second Jewish person, and the first Jewish woman on the Supreme Court, she had an illustrious law career before that. Before she was on the Supreme Court, she served on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, where she was appointed in 1980 by then-President Jimmy Carter. Before that, she was a lawyer and a law professor in her own right, and actually argued six cases in front of the Supreme Court, winning five of them. And that's just astonishing. So why am I bringing up Ruth Bader Ginsburg on a show that's about movies? Well, the primary reason is not only because she's a legend in her own right, but also because over the years, I've reviewed hundreds of movies. I've almost made it to the thousands, but two of the movies that came out in 2017 were specifically about her. One was the Academy Award-nominated documentary RBG. The other was the dramatized movie On the Basis of Sex, which is inspired by actual events. And On the Basis of Sex was a good movie. I wouldn't call it great, but I did actually think that the actress who played Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the movie, Felicity Jones, did a great job. And there are also some very strong supporting performances in that film by Armie Hammer and Justin Theroux, amongst other fine actors. I would say that although the movie had its moments, one of the things that was baffling to me about the movie was that it didn't end with Felicity Jones playing Ruth Bader Ginsburg arguing in front of the Supreme Court, which is astonishing to me, not only because, as I said, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she was a lawyer, argued six cases in front of the Supreme Court, but this is like making a movie about Michael Jordan and not mentioning the NBA Finals. But if you want to see a good movie about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, see On the Basis of Sex. If you want to see a great movie, see RBG. RBG is a documentary. I did mention before it was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. It lost to the National Geographic documentary Free Solo, which people who haven't seen that documentary are angry about it. It's one of those things that I thought Free Solo was an excellent documentary, but even though I'm not disappointed that it won in 2019 for Best Documentary, I still think RBG should have won, and there's no such thing as an unprejudiced opinion, but I'm just saying that. But still, it's a testament to Justice Ginsburg's influence during her life that two movies were made about her, which is more than, I think, all the other Supreme Court justices who have ever served in U.S. history combined. And I think it's going to be that way for a while. So it's great that Justice Ginsburg was given the respect and admiration and adoration that she deserved later in her life. It's fantastic that she was immortalized in film, and we really lost, I'm going to try not to choke up here. We really did lose a great American yesterday. Again, the news isn't surprising since she was battling pancreatic cancer and she was 87, but it was just one of those things that made 2020 a really hard year for America and for everyone. So, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Words on Film salutes you. Rest in power. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The first movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is a Netflix original that is called The Devil All the Time. It premiered on Netflix on September 16th, 2020, and it is a movie that is based on a book, a best-selling book that was also critically acclaimed, that was initially written by Donald Ray Pollock. And it's one of those deals where I didn't know that The Devil All the Time was based on a book when I first started watching it, but then when I saw the credits where it said, based on the novel written by Mr. Pollock, I thought to myself, oh man, I wish I had read it before seeing the movie. If you can read the book before seeing the movie, I always recommend you do that, but I don't always have the time to do so. But if I had the time, I probably would have made time for this book, because the movie in and of itself is fantastic. The movie is about sinister characters who converge around a young man devoted to protecting those he loves in a post-war backwoods town in West Virginia that is teeming with corruption and brutality. The main character in this movie is a young man by the name of Arvin Russell, who's played in adult form here by Tom Holland. And we're given a lot of backstory to Arvin's upbringing before he ultimately struck out on his own. And I'm not going to tell you why he struck out on his own, but he had a very troubled upbringing, not only because he grew up poor in rural West Virginia, but he also has a father, a World War II veteran by the name of Willard, who's played by Bill Skarsgård, best known for playing the role of Pennywise in both It movies, based on the novel by Stephen King. And he also has a loving mother by the name of Charlotte, who's played by Haley Bennett. And he has a strong upbringing, but things become complicated when his mother Charlotte begins to battle cancer. And not as much was known about cancer back in the late 1950s when these events took place. And, well, that's really all there is to say, but things get a lot more complicated in his life when his father Willard, Bill Skarsgård's character, begins to pray for his wife, and I think nobly, for her cancer to be removed. But eventually, Willard's behavior begins to degenerate, where his views of religion and of praying begin to get skewed. And he, as well as other people who are in this movie who claim to be very religious and go to church seem to have a very flawed understanding of how religion works and what your belief in God is supposed to mean and to what privileges such a belief entitles you. And it's very complicated to explain, but you can definitely see in this movie that religion plays a major role, but it's a movie that deals with certain negative aspects of organized religion, particularly organized Christianity, and how sometimes a belief in God and praying just isn't enough. The Lord works in mysterious ways, but he doesn't always work the way to which you want him to work. And I think this is a movie that I think details that very well. There are also some other rather nefarious characters, including a husband and wife team by the name of Carl and Sandy Henderson, played by Jason Clark and Riley Keough, who have a connection to Tom Holland's character, Arvin, but they are outlaws, and they also have a side business where they take part in low-tech voyeurism. That is, they take strangers from off the street, particularly male strangers, and Jason Clark's character, Carl, photographs them with his wife having sex. And this is part voyeurism, part fetish, and all sorts of creepy. And there are other really great characters in this movie that make up a melting pot of just a lot of deplorable character, with Tom Holland's character probably being the most grounded and most centered character in this film. There's also a corrupt preacher by the name of Preston Teagarden, who's played by Robert Pattinson. And the fascinating thing about Robert Pattinson's character is that he's the new pastor in this small West Virginia town, and a lot of people, including some lifelong churchgoers who are older, are immediately turned off by his personality. But they give him the benefit of the doubt because they think that God sent him to this church for a reason. But then as the movie progresses, you begin to see Reverend or Pastor Teagarden engage in more nefarious and unsavory, and let's face it, unchristian-like activities. But I think that a lot of themes here tie into a lot of people who have been lifelong Catholics. And when certain parish priests, not all of them, but some of them, engaged in such unchristian-like activity when they were not preaching the gospel, people who were devout Catholics went along with it because getting attention from a priest was like getting attention from God. It's a very troubling way certain religious people view their community church and the people who work in it, thinking that they couldn't do any harm, but it's a feeling that is prevalent in many other parts of America and parts of the world, particularly where there is a strong religious center of town. And this movie explores a lot of these themes. It's not based on a true story, but there are themes in this movie that are certainly very real. And there are also some very, very savage moments in this film. But at the same time, I couldn't stop watching it. I thought Tom Holland, in particular, did an amazing job in the lead of this movie. He plays definitely the moral center of this movie, but he also engages in some activities that are not good, but when you see how he's influenced by the people who raised him, you can probably admire him more for doing the right things than when he does the wrong things. But this movie is hard to stop watching. It is over 2 hours, which is above average for the length of a Netflix movie, but I absolutely loved it. I think it's one of my favorite movies of the year so far, and it gets my rating of, and let me say that again, The Devil All the Time gets my rating of a knockout. It is a movie that is very hard to watch sometimes, but the acting performances by most of those involved, especially Tom Holland, Bill Skarsgård, Jason Clarke, Robert Pattinson, Mia Wasikowska, Riley Keough, Haley Bennett, Sebastian Stan, Eliza Scanlon. I could go on. There are so many great actors in this movie. They all weave a great tapestry of narrative in this movie. I found myself caring about all the characters in the film, particularly those I didn't like. And West Virginia itself plays a really great role in this film. It's almost as if West Virginia is its own character. And it made me wonder, this movie that takes place from the late 1940s to the mid-1960s, if West Virginia is still like that today. It's certainly one of those things that makes me very curious, and it's a testament to how great The Devil All the Time, the movie, really is. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The next movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is another Netflix original that is called The Paramedic, but it's best known by its Spanish title, El Practicante, and it's directed by Carles Torras, who is a Spanish director, and by Spanish I mean that he is from the Republic of Spain, where this movie was filmed, presumably in Madrid. And it follows the life of Angel, which looks like angel in English, but in Spanish it's pronounced Angel, who works in an ambulance service. After a tragic accident, his personal life begins to deteriorate as he becomes more and more suspicious of his partner, Vanay. Angel is played by a fine actor by the name of Mario Casas, who I've never seen in a movie prior to this. Maybe he's popped up in a TV show here and there, but because he is an actor from Spain, I've never seen him before, but he's a guy to watch, certainly. His wife in the movie, Vanay, is played by Deborah Francois. And his character, Angel, you see him in the first half hour of the film, and he is a dedicated and excellent paramedic. And at first, when I read the description of this movie, when I was doing my preview of movies that are coming out the week of September 13th through 19th, 2020, I initially thought to myself that The Paramedic, El Practicante, would be a movie that would be like Martin Scorsese's 1999 film Bringing Out the Dead, starring Nicolas Cage, which, by the way, is one of Martin Scorsese's most underrated movies. It's an excellent film. Nicolas Cage did a great job in that film, but these two movies, The Paramedic and Bringing Out the Dead, are not alike. For example, the movie Bringing Out the Dead is actually based on a true story, loosely. The Paramedic is, as far as I know, entirely fictional. I know that there were three people who wrote the screenplay, including the director, Carles Torras, but it's not based on a book, it's an entirely original story. And actually, the tragic accident that happens, this is not exactly a spoiler because this happens less than half an hour into the film, is that the character Angel is in an ambulance helping a patient. He's sitting in the back and his partner is driving the ambulance, and through no fault of their own, they get in a crash with a vehicle and an intersection. And what happens? Angel gets paralyzed from the waist down. And that in and of itself is really tragic. But he begins to mentally deteriorate and he becomes more suspicious of his, who's presumed to be his wife, but it says in the description here that the woman Vanay is his partner. And he begins to become suspicious that she is cheating on him. And then eventually when they break up, again, not a spoiler, but it is a pivotal plot moment, he begins to become obsessed with her. And this doesn't happen to every person who gets into an accident that's no fault of their own and becomes permanently debilitated, but it does make a fascinating movie to watch and certainly a very troubling movie. And I did think that Mario Casas did a great job playing Angel. You certainly felt for him when he was in the accident he was in and he becomes permanently disabled. And while you don't condone, or at least you shouldn't condone, what he does during the next three quarters of the movie, you can somewhat sympathize with his feelings, but at the same time, you also know that there are other venues and other ways he could have persevered from this accident. And he didn't have to go the way he did. But we do live in a world where some people overcome the odds and some people don't. And El Practicante is a movie about, or a story about, somebody who did not overcome the odds. And it usually involves them becoming their own worst enemy. And Angel does terrible things to his partner, Vanay, as well as other friends and neighbors of his within his life who are well-meaning and well-intentioned. And I don't think this movie can be seen as something that's particularly realistic in that this is something that always happens, but it is something that sometimes happens. And I think that the solidity of the storytelling here makes all the characters sympathetic, if not empathetic. And I also love the cinematography in this movie, and I appreciated it for how troubling it was, because there are stories like this that do happen out there in the world, whether we want them to or not. So El Practicante, also known as The Paramedic in its English title, gets my rating of a knockout. It is a movie that is quite disturbing. It has excellent acting and fantastic cinematography. And Carles Torras, the director, is a director and writer and overall filmmaker with whom I wasn't entirely familiar when I went to see this film, but I will definitely seek out the other movies that he has directed, of which there are five full-length features. And I think it's safe to say that The Paramedic is his American or North American debut, if you want to call it that. But he's certainly a director to watch, and I certainly appreciated his masterwork as a director after watching El Practicante, a.k.a. The Paramedic. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The next movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is Hope Frozen, also known by its subtitle, A Quest to Live Twice. This is a documentary that, according to IMDb, it was made in 2018, but it made its North American debut on September 15th, 2020 on Netflix. So this is a movie that you will be able to find on Netflix streaming right now. And I don't think Netflix ever removes any of its original movies or TV shows from its streaming lineup. But Hope Frozen is a movie that, because it's a documentary, it is a true story. And it revolves around a Buddhist scientist from Bangkok, Thailand, who decides to cryopreserve his daughter's brain. And a little bit of background about his daughter. His daughter was 2 years old when she developed a rare form of brain cancer. And this brain cancer resulted in her having to, well, at first she was in a coma, but then she had to undergo various surgeries and chemotherapy treatments in a single day at the age of two. And unfortunately, doctors told this Buddhist scientist that his daughter would not live past the age of three. And it would be very lucky if she even reached her third birthday. And as scandal swirls around the family, they struggle to grieve a child that, in their view, is suspended between death and a future reawakening. What that means is that the Thai scientist, whose name is Narirat Naovarapong, decides to cryogenically freeze his daughter. And the cryogenic freezing is not intended to cure the brain cancer, but what he hopes is that by cryogenically freezing his daughter's brain, that if she was to survive years, decades, maybe even centuries from the point at which she's frozen, that scientists and doctors will have enough understanding of brain cancer to eventually cure it. And I don't have a problem with somebody doing this to their infant daughter, because the alternative is that she dies. And even if she does die when they eventually unfreeze her brain could actually give scientists, you know, worst case scenario, the understanding of brain cancer in infants, and that could potentially save other people's lives. A realization to which Dr. Naovarapong does not seem to get to, at least in this documentary. But the movie details the Naovarapong's family's birth of their daughter, as well as their grieving over her undeserved cancer diagnosis. It focuses on Dr. Naovarapong's son, Matrix, and yes, that is his real first name, who is an aspiring doctor himself, and also, I think, admirationally, does a lot of research after his sister's tragic fate about advances in the fight against cancer, as well as the risks and potential rewards of cryopreserving someone. This movie, unfortunately, doesn't get into the history of cryopreserving and how that came to be. And this movie actually could have gotten into that, and I think it would have made a welcome addition to this movie without making it too much of a detailed or a detail-oriented documentary, or at least one that has dry facts. And I think that they had the right idea putting this kind of story behind the documentary about cryopreserving, but I wanted to hear about other families too, particularly, and I know this is a Thailand documentary made by a native Thailand director, Pailin Wedel, but I actually wanted to know about people who chose to cryopreserve their families all over the world. I was particularly interested in hearing more about Ted Williams and his family, because when Ted Williams died, not only did the Williams family make the decision to freeze Ted Williams, but his son also requested in his will that he be cryogenically frozen as well. And sure enough, he died a few years later, and both their bodies are cryogenically preserved at the moment. I do think this movie is good when it details the process of cryopreserving this family's daughter's brain and shows some and dispels some common misconceptions about cryogenically freezing someone. In other words, it's not just putting somebody in a freezer. There are other more complicated techniques behind it. But the movie does lose its way in the last half hour when the pacing of the story within it begins to drag. And there was one particularly questionable sequence in the documentary where Matrix, now Virat Pong, is studying to find cures for cancer, potentially, and also research more about cryopreserving and really calculate out the chances of his younger sister's survival. But there's one scene where he's with a friend getting a haircut. In other words, his friend is cutting Matrix's hair. And they are having some discussion about cryopreserving, but that scene, even though it was about 5 minutes, went on for way too long. There was another scene where Matrix is speaking with somebody in a cryopreserve lab who's American, and he's telling him about many of the realistic risks of cryopreserving someone and what the odds of somebody actually living after their brain is unfrozen actually are. But the scene that comes after it has Matrix FaceTiming his parents and telling them verbatim exactly what his American scientist friend said. And there could have been some edits there that would have made it a bit more intriguing. And for a movie that's 1 hour, 15 minutes long, they could have cut actually about 10 minutes out of it. And it is a bad sign for a movie, no matter how long or short it is, where you can pinpoint scenes that should have been taken out of the film. And I do think there were at least two for this movie. And it seemed like once it got 45 minutes into the Nao Virat Pong's quest to freeze their daughter in hopes that she will live decades or maybe even centuries from now, the movie didn't quite know what to do during its last third. You got an update on the family as well as the state of their daughter in the cryopreserve lab, but there wasn't enough there, I think, to necessitate a full-length documentary. So, Hope Frozen is a documentary about a fascinating topic, as well as one that weighs the ups and downs of cryopreserving someone, because it also begs the question, if you're cryopreserving someone, you are basically delaying the inevitable, right? And if you are cryopreserving someone with the intent of them living well beyond your death, is it really worth it to freeze them? And these are valid questions that this documentary presents, not in subtitle form, but in the form of these interviews, particularly with the Nao Virat Pong family, who do have some noble efforts in saving their infant daughter, who did, I don't think anyone deserves to have cancer, but an infant definitely doesn't either. And it's just another chapter in the scientific battle against cancer, which scientists and doctors haven't figured out yet. But the movie does go wrong in the last third of it when you're given some updates about the Nao Virat Pong family, but they're not exactly updates that pertain to the story that Hope Frozen is trying to tell at large. And for that reason, Hope Frozen, A Quest to Live Twice, gets my rating of a checkout. I do think it is a documentary with very noble intentions. It does weigh the pros and cons of a controversial scientific subject, which may or may not be worth it in the grand scheme of things. And we don't know that as the human race, as a scientific community. But the movie loses its way when it forgets to tell, or it doesn't focus as much on those valid scientific questions as it should. And it really should have. But if you are interested in the subject of cryopreserving, then check out Hope Frozen on Netflix right now. Back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. And now that I've reviewed all the movies that I have to review for you for this show, it's now time for me to get into a spoken word preview of movies that are coming out on streaming for the week of September 20th through September 25th, 2020. And the number of original movies that are premiering on Netflix tend to dwindle towards the end of the month. But I'll give you a spoken word preview of movies that are coming out on Netflix. And I'm going to avoid doing the TV shows that are premiering, or at least getting into a lot of detail about the TV shows, because this is Words on Film, not Words on TV. And a lot of people have asked me if I would consider doing TV show reviews. And there are YouTube channels and podcasts out there that do movie and TV reviews. And that's good for them. The only reason I don't do TV shows is because it takes a very long time to watch a series from beginning to end, no matter how entertaining it is. And I love shows like The Walking Dead as much as the next person. But if you really think about it, an entire season of The Walking Dead is 15 hours. And if I start watching the show and base my critique on it, on what I see, reviewing TV shows is going to feel more like a chore. And as much as I agree with Roger Ebert's assertion that there's no good movie that's ever long enough, and there's no bad movie that's ever short enough, I 100% agree with that. However, it's just going to feel long if I review TV shows. So I'm keeping it to movies, which include scripted movies and documentaries, but limited series are not off limits. That is, documentaries or even scripted shows that have a very limited number of episodes, probably about four or five. I would watch those, and I would let you know what I think, particularly if I have time to watch them. So anyway, with that said, here's a preview of the movies and some limited series that are going to be streaming on Netflix. They're going to be premiering anytime between Monday, September 21st, and Friday, September 25th, 2020. The one and only movie that is premiering on Netflix on Monday, September 21st, is a documentary that's called A Love Song for Latasha. And this sounds like a fascinating documentary based on the title, because Latasha is certainly a very unusual name. And I can't find any information about it, unfortunately, but it's all the testament to the movie that I'd like to see it based on its title. I don't know who Latasha is. I don't know why they made a movie about her, but or why they even made a love song about her. But that documentary is premiering on Netflix on Monday, September 21st. I'm sorry I don't have more information about it, but it's a documentary I will try to see, and I will let you know what I think on next week's show. So on Tuesday, September 22nd, there are two movies that are premiering. The first is not a Netflix original, but it is a movie that I've never heard of that's called Kiss the Ground. This is a scripted movie that was made in 2020, Despite the fact that it was made in 2020, it is not a Netflix original, but according to IMDb, it came out in April 2020, or at least was slated to do so. The only problem is that it probably wasn't released in theaters because of the pandemic. But this is a movie about, that is a documentary actually, that is about a revolutionary group of activists, scientists, farmers, and politicians who band together in a global movement of regenerative agriculture that could balance our climate, replenish our vast water supplies, and feed the world. That is a heavy order. But the movie not only features activists, scientists, farmers, and politicians, it also features some celebrities. For instance, Woody Harrelson actually narrates the film, and there are interviews among several people, but among them are Patricia Arquette, the Academy Award-winning actress, Tom Brady, yes, the Tom Brady, the six-time Super Bowl winner, who is an American treasure, in my opinion. And I live in a state where that is so against the opinion of everyone else, but I did once live in a city where just about everyone loved Tom Brady. And that might have changed now since he's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but he's interviewed in this movie as well as his wife, Gisele Bündchen. So this sounds like a very interesting documentary. Because it has Tom Brady in it, I will watch it, and I will let you know what I think on my next show. I'll tell you about my status of next week's show in just a minute, probably when the clock is ticking on this show. But the other movie that's going to be premiering is another documentary. This one is a Netflix original, unlike Kiss the Ground, and this one is called The Playbook. It is a limited series, it looks like, and it profiles legendary coaches as they share the rules they live by to achieve success in sports and in life. And there's another Boston icon in this movie who unfortunately is not with any of the Boston teams. It is Doc Rivers, whose real name is Glenn Rivers. And even though this guy, Doc Rivers, is not with the Boston Celtics anymore, he did bring the Boston Celtics to their first NBA Finals championship since 1986. And for that reason, he has my respect until my dying day. Other coaches that are profiled in this documentary include Patrick Mouratoglou, Jill Ellis, Jose Mourinho, and Don Staley. Obviously, of these episodes, Doc Rivers is the one I know the best, and or at least I know, period. And I'm not exactly sure if this is going to be a documentary series that's not limited, but I will check it out, and I will let you know on my next show. So those are the movies that are going to be premiering on Tuesday, September 22nd on Netflix. The other series, for those of you who are interested, that are premiering that Tuesday include Chico Bon Bon, Monkey with a Tool Belt, which sounds like an amazing movie, but I can't say how it is as a TV show, but its third season is premiering, as well as the fourth season of Jack Whitehall, Travels with My Father, which also sounds like another fascinating, potentially documentary, but it is indeed a series that's been on for four seasons. And there is a series premiere of a show called Mighty Express. I won't get into what these shows are, but I'm just letting you know that these shows are going to be premiering on Netflix on Tuesday, September 22nd. On Wednesday, September 23rd, two movies are going to be premiering. The first one is the movie Waiting, which came out in 2005. This is a movie starring Ryan Reynolds, David Kashner, Dane Cook, Louise Guzman, and several other people. This is a movie that was kind of like if Animal House took place in an Applebee's. It's an okay movie. I thought there were some funny parts in it, but I think the parts that actually really shined in the film was when it wasn't trying so hard to be funny. And Ryan Reynolds is in the film, and say what you will about him being Deadpool, I think the Deadpool movies were funny and he was okay in them, but Ryan Reynolds is not a naturally funny actor, I don't think. He's a guy who wants to be funny, but has to really work at it, whereas other people are more naturally funny, or at least they look like they're not trying. And especially with comedy, you have to look like you're not trying to be funny and be funny Otherwise, your credibility is out the window. And I always felt like Ryan Reynolds in his movies like Van Wilder, Waiting, and other such films tried way too hard. But there were some notable things about Waiting. Particularly, I liked Justin Long the best in this film. I mean, he plays a guy who is a high school graduate but didn't go to college because he couldn't afford it. So he's working full-time in this dining establishment, and he's really weighing whether or not to continue working for it. He has a very good backstory, but I feel like studio interference got in the way of Waiting being great. But you can decide for yourself. When Waiting debuts on Netflix on Wednesday, September 23rd, but just to reiterate, Waiting is not a new movie. It's been out for 15 years. There is a film that is premiering on Netflix that is a Netflix original on Wednesday, September 23rd, and the movie is called Enola Holmes. The movie stars Millie Bobby Brown, best known for the Netflix original show Stranger Things, and it also co-stars Henry Cavill, who played Superman for several DCEU movies, and he's not playing Superman anymore. But the movie also co-stars Sam Claflin, Helena Bonham Carter, we haven't seen her in a while, Fiona Shaw, and several other actors. It's about a young woman by the name of Enola Holmes. Henry Cavill plays Sherlock Holmes, and Enola Holmes is Sherlock Holmes' teen sister. And when Enola Holmes discovers her mother missing, she sets off to find her, becoming a super sleuth in her own right, as she outwits her famous brother and unravels a dangerous conspiracy around a mysterious young lord. So this is based on a novel written not by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, but by Nancy Springer, who obviously took characters created by Arthur Conan Doyle, Enola Holmes not being one of them, and created her own story. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It looks like an interesting film. Certainly Millie Bobby Brown is an actress with some great screen presence. So if you're interested, Enola Holmes is premiering on Netflix on Wednesday, September 23rd. This is a movie I will check out, and I'll let you know what I think on the next show that I do. Another movie that's coming out on Thursday, September 24th, this is not a Netflix original, but it is premiering on Netflix, and it is called Real Steel. This is a movie that came out in 2011, and it stars Hugh Jackman, who is usually very good in films. And this is actually a pretty cool premise. I haven't seen this film, but I'd really like to. It takes place in the near future where robot boxing is a top sport. And I'm amazed, actually. It seems like we have the technology to create robots that will battle the hell out of each other. And by robots, I mean humanoid robots that will, you know, just knock the crap out of each other. I would love to see that. I think that would be a multi-billion dollar sport if it gets off the ground. I think we had something very similar to that on Comedy Central with a show called BattleBots, but that was more like a science show where people who were robotic enthusiasts but didn't necessarily have a degree in robotics created these esoteric robots that battled one another. It still was a fun show, but I'd really like to see some robots that look like RoboCop or C-3PO just pummel each other. That sounds like so much fun. But the movie Real Steel takes place in, you know, the not-too-distant future where this is a multi-billion dollar sport where nobody gets hurt other than the robots, but a struggling ex-boxer who's played by Hugh Jackman feel he's found a champion in a discarded robot. It sounds very cool. I wish I could say I've seen this movie before, but I haven't. But it is premiering on Netflix on Thursday, September 24th, so definitely check it out if you can, or if you haven't seen it before. And I obviously don't have to tell people who has seen it before, like it if you see it again if you really liked it. That is entirely up to you. But on Friday, September 25th, we've got a number of series premiering. For instance, there's a docuseries called A Perfect Crime. There's also another series that I assume is scripted that is premiering that is called Country-ish. I don't know if that's related to the show Black-ish, but I'd be curious to find out. There's another series that's called The School Nurse Files, which again would sound like an amazing movie, but it also sound like a never-ending plethora of ideas for a TV show. And finally, the other series that's going to be premiering on Friday, September 25th is Sneakerheads. I don't know what the show is about. Is it about people who make sneakers? Is it about people who are obsessed with sneakers? Is it about shoes at all? Who knows? But either way, it's premiering on Friday, September 25th on Netflix. Are there any movies that are premiering on Friday, September 25th? Well, it looks like there is one. It is not a Netflix original, but it's one that's called Nasty C. And I could imagine what Nasty C would stand for. Unfortunately, I can't find any information right now about that show. IMDb is not giving me any information on it, so I'm going to have to leave it at that. I will tell you that is going to be premiering on Netflix. It is not a Netflix original, but it is making its debut on the streaming platform, presumably, on Friday, September 25th. So I can't tell you whether or not it's going to be good, but I'm just telling you it's going to be there.
Well, that's all the time I have for this episode of Words on Film. I always love talking about movies, and I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please subscribe and rate the show and leave comments if you can. I would love to get your feedback, even if it's more criticism than praise. This has been Words on Film. I'm Dan Burke, and until my next episode, I'll see you at the movies.